A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hello, Herman and Corn. So a few years ago, I noticed that projectors had moved from the periphery of the technological world. You'd see them in corporate training centers, those kind of environments, big clunky things attached to the ceiling, to suddenly, I remember taking a Lufthansa flight and seeing them in the in-flight magazine, which is always, I think, a good bellwether actually for tech that's either mainstream or is good enough that it can be sold to the mainstream, because you don't want to have a high return rate for things you sell on an airplane. And probably a good deal of technology bought on an airplane is in the category of an impulse purchase. But these things are great. I looked at them and saw that the Anker Nebula, they'd taken that kind of big form factor and reduced it into something that looked like a soda can. And we picked one up. We got one on an Amazon sale, and it's like the very basic one. It's already end of life, the first iteration of their line, just to test it out. And I have to say, I'm not much of a TV guy. I don't really watch TV. In fact, I watch Netflix and a bit of YouTube, but I do love watching that at the end of the day. And we put it up in our bedroom, and really, it's been a fantastic product. Really enjoyed it. Took a bit of getting used to, but it's decent. And what I like about it mostly is I feel like there's something very nice about the fact that you don't have to dedicate this big chunk of space to this is where your TV goes, and that kind of dominates the living space. You can just kind of have it on a little swivel thing that comes up from behind your couch. You use it for a few hours, goes back, you have the space back. You can bring it with you. I have a nice protective case for it, so I think it's a great little piece of hardware, and I've become very fond of it. When I can afford to, I want to upgrade, because my one is already like past it's no longer supported, which means the App Store doesn't really work anymore. But I'm interested, when I do get around to that, to know what to look for in one of these projectors in terms of the spec, because they've kind of got their own little world in terms of resolution rates. Now, I think that a lot of people, you know, the kind of craze for 4K, 8K content is ridiculous. I'm kind of happy with something that's reasonably clear. What is more useful to me is I'm becoming into sound. And I know we talked about things like Bluetooth, AuraCast. I'm not sure I'll ever have a home surround system or something that fancy, but even with Snapcast, I've often thought that being able to pipe into a multi-room sound system that's basically constructed by cobbling together a few standalone speakers could be kind of cool. Second question I have about projectors for you is what you project onto. Now, I know that the traditional thing is to have a projector screen, and I haven't really tried one out yet. We're just projecting onto the kind of traditional white walls you see in all over the place in Israel. It works fairly well, but if you are taking the next step in your projecting experience, what you actually look for in one of those, because again, you kind of come across all these terms for describing what type of cloth they are, and it's all kind of jargon to me. I think what I would probably like is a roll down projector screen in the bedroom, and then if you want to take the projector on the road, just take it off the stand. Herman and Corin, let's talk about home projectors, the portable kind, those screens they display onto, and what would you be looking for in a modern one, especially taking advantage of some of the things coming out in Bluetooth multi-room audio?
Daniel sent us this one, and it's actually a question I've been chewing on myself. He picked up one of those Anker Nebula capsule projectors a while back, the solar can form factor, and he's been using it in the bedroom projected straight onto a white wall. He loves that it doesn't demand permanent real estate in the room, that you can tuck it away when you're done and reclaim the space. But his unit's hit end of life. The App Store is dead on it, and he's looking to upgrade. So he's asking two things. What specs actually matter when you're shopping for one of these portable projectors? And what do you project onto when you're ready to move past the white wall? He's also curious about multi-room audio, whether something like Snapcast or Auracast could tie into the setup.
Oh, this is a good one. And before we dive in, quick note, today's script is coming to us courtesy of DeepSeek V4 Pro, so if anything sounds unusually articulate, that's why.
I was going to say, my leaf medicine regimen doesn't usually produce this level of coherence. But all right, let's talk projectors. Daniel mentioned something I think is a really sharp observation. He called the InFlight magazine a bellwether for when tech crosses into mainstream readiness. If you're selling something on a plane, the return rate has to be near zero. Nobody's shipping a projector back from Frankfurt because the throw ratio annoyed them.
The InFlight catalog is this brutal filtering mechanism. It selects for products where the out-of-box experience is so intuitive and the value proposition so immediately legible that someone, impulse, buying at 30,000 feet isn't going to regret it when they get home. Portable projectors crossed that threshold around 2018-2019. That's when Anker's Nebula line and a few others really nailed the formula. Integrated battery, usable built-in speaker, Android TV onboard, autofocus, keystone correction. You unbox it, point it at a wall, and you're watching something in under 2 minutes.
That's the thing Daniel's current unit has lost. The App Store is dead because the onboard Android version is too old to support current apps. So when he upgrades, one of the first questions is going to be how long the software stays viable.
Which is a real issue with these smart projectors. You're essentially buying a projector wrapped around an Android TV stick, and the update lifecycle is tied to whatever chipset they used and how long the manufacturer feels like pushing firmware updates. Anker's actually been better than most on this, but even they eventually drop support for first-gen hardware. The workaround is to treat the projector as a dumb display and plug in an external streaming dongle, but that defeats some of the elegance.
Let's walk through what Daniel should actually care about when he's shopping. Because projector specs have their own little vocabulary, and half of it is marketing fluff, what's the first thing you'd tell someone to look at?
Everything else is secondary. And this is where most people get misled, because brightness in projectors is measured in a unit that's been systematically abused by manufacturers for years. You'll see specs quoting thousands of lumens, and it's almost never the number that matters.
Explain lumens, because I think Daniel mentioned he finds the 4K, 8K resolution wars a bit ridiculous, and I kind of agree. What's the actual brightness number that separates usable with some ambient light from you need a pitch black room?
There are a few different lumen standards, and they mean wildly different things. ANSI lumens is the standardized measurement, American National Standards Institute. It measures brightness across a calibrated test pattern at specific points on the screen. That's the honest number. Then you've got LED. Lumens, which is what most portable projector manufacturers quote, and it's a measurement of the light source itself, not what actually hits the screen. LED lumens can be 3 to 4 times higher than ANSI lumens for the same projector. So when you see a portable projector claiming 1,000 lumens, it might be delivering 250 to 300 ANSI lumens in practice.
They're measuring the bulb, not the beam.
And then there's CVIA lumens, a Chinese standard common on budget projectors from brands like Wanbo and XJimmy. It's roughly comparable to ANSI, but the testing methodology is slightly different. The point is, you can't compare lumen numbers across brands unless you know which standard they're using.
What's a good ANSI lumen number for a portable projector in a bedroom setting?
For a dark room, and Daniel's using this in a bedroom at night, you want at least 200 ANSI lumens for a watchable 60 to 80 inch image. 300 to 500 ANSI lumens get you something genuinely pleasant with decent contrast and color saturation. Above 500 ANSI lumens in a portable form factor, you're paying a significant premium, but you also get some ambient light tolerance. You could watch with a small lamp on and still see what's happening.
What's Daniel's current Nebula probably putting out?
The first-gen Nebula capsule was rated at 100 ANSI lumens, which is fine in a completely dark room, but it's dim. You're squinting a bit during dark scenes. The current generation, something like the Nebula Capsule 3 or the XJimmy Mogo series, those are pushing 250 to 400 ANSI lumens from a similar form factor. That's a meaningful jump.
What second?
Resolution, but with a caveat. Daniel said he's not chasing 4K and 8K, and he's right not to. For a portable projector at 60 to 100 inches, the difference between 720p and 1080p is noticeable. The difference between 1080p and 4K is subtle, unless you're sitting very close or projecting very large. And most of these portable units that claim 4K are using pixel shifting, not native 4K. They're rapidly shifting a 1080p DLP chip to simulate 4K. It looks sharper than 1080p, but it's not the same as native 4K.
DLP being digital light processing, the Texas Instruments chip technology.
DLP is dominant in portable projectors because it's compact, reliable, and the chips don't degrade over time the way LCD panels can. The trade-off is something called the rainbow effect. Some people see brief flashes of red, green, and blue when they move their eyes across the image. It's a byproduct of how DLP uses a spinning color wheel. Modern DLP projectors spin the wheel fast enough that most people don't notice, but if Daniel's sensitive to it, he'd want to test a unit before buying or look for an LCOS projector instead.
LCOS being liquid crystal on silicon. Those tend to be larger and more expensive, though.
Right. Not really in the portable soda can category. So for Daniel's use case, DLP at 1080p is the sweet spot, something like the XGIMI Halo Plus or the Nebula Mars 3. Those are a step up in size from the capsule, more like a small bookshelf speaker, but they deliver much better brightness and resolution.
Let me throw a curveball at you. Daniel mentioned he's projecting onto a white wall in Israel, and he said it works fairly well. What's he actually losing by not using a screen?
More than most people realize. A white wall reflects light in all directions, including back toward the projector and off to the sides. That scattered light reduces perceived contrast because it bounces around the room and re-illuminates the wall. A proper projector screen is designed to control that. The surface has what's called gain, a measure of reflectivity compared to a standard white reference surface. A gain of 1.0 means it reflects the same amount of light as a white board. A gain of 1.3 means it reflects 30% more light back toward the viewer.
Gain isn't just about brightness, right? It affects viewing angle.
High-gain screens are brighter but have a narrower viewing angle. If you're sitting directly in front, great. If you're off to the side, the image drops off noticeably. For a bedroom where you're mostly watching from the bed, that's probably fine. For a living room with seating spread out, you'd want something closer to 1.0 or 1.
What should Daniel look for in a roll-down screen?
He mentioned wanting a roll-down screen specifically, which makes sense for the Reclaim the Space philosophy. The material is the key variable. The cheapest option is a matte white screen with gain around 1.0 or 1. That's already better than a painted wall because the surface is engineered to be uniformly reflective. No hot spots, no texture variations. Next step up is ALR, ambient light rejecting. These screens have a specialized optical coating or microstructured surface that reflects light from the projector while absorbing light coming from other directions like windows or lamps.
ALR is specifically for rooms that aren't pitch black.
And there are two types. Ceiling light rejecting, CLR, is designed for ultra-short throw projectors that sit right below the screen. Angular ALR screens reject light from the sides. For Daniel's portable projector, which is probably going to be placed on a side table or a tripod behind the couch, standard ALR is the right call, but ALR screens are more expensive and they're directional. You need to be within a certain viewing cone for the effect to work.
What kind of price range are we talking for a roll-down screen?
A basic manual pull-down matte white screen in the 60 to 100 inch range runs maybe 50 to 100. A tab-tensioned one, where the screen has weights or cables along the edges to keep it perfectly flat, that's more like 150 to 300. ALR roll-down screens start around $300 and go up from there. The tab tensioning matters because if the screen develops waves or curls at the edges, you get distortion in the projected image, and it's surprisingly distracting once you notice it.
I've seen that. It's like watching a movie through a funhouse mirror. Alright, so brightness, resolution, screen material. What else is on the spec sheet that Daniel should care about?
This is the distance from the projector to the screen divided by the image width. A throw ratio of 1.2 means you need 1.2 meters of distance to produce a 1 meter wide image. Most portable projectors have a throw ratio around 1.2 to 1. That means to get an 80-inch diagonal image, you need about 2 to 2.5 meters of distance.
Daniel's projecting in a bedroom, so he probably has that. But what if he doesn't?
Then he'd want a short throw projector, which has a throw ratio under 1.0, meaning it can sit closer to the wall and still produce a large image. Some of the newer portable units are getting into the 1/8:1, but short-throw optics add cost and complexity, and they're more sensitive to placement. If the projector isn't perfectly square to the wall, the distortion is more pronounced.
Which brings up keystone correction. Daniel's current unit probably has automatic keystone, right?
Keystone correction digitally warps the image to compensate for the projector being off-axis. If you're projecting from a side table rather than dead center, the image would naturally be a trapezoid. Keystone correction squares it up. Automatic keystone uses a camera or sensor to detect the angle and adjust in real time. It's incredibly convenient, but it comes at a cost. You're losing resolution because the projector is scaling and warping the image, and you're adding a small amount of input lag.
How much lag are we talking?
For video, it's negligible, maybe 20 to 40 milliseconds. For gaming, it can be noticeable. If Daniel's just watching Netflix, auto keystone is a pure win. If he ever wants to plug in a game console, he'd want to turn it off and position the projector square.
Let's talk about audio, because Daniel brought up something interesting. He mentioned Snapcast and Auracast, and the idea of cobbling together a multi-room audio system from standalone speakers. How does that connect to a projector setup?
This is where it gets fun. Most portable projectors have a built-in speaker, and they've gotten surprisingly good. The Nebula Mars 3 has a 40-watt speaker system with Dolby Audio. For casual viewing, it's fine. But if you want anything approaching cinematic sound, you need external audio. The traditional way is to run an aux cable or use Bluetooth to a single speaker. But Bluetooth has limitations, latency being the big one. If the audio lags behind the video by even 50 milliseconds, dialogue looks out of sync, and it's maddening.
That's where Auracast comes in.
Auracast is the new Bluetooth broadcast audio standard. It lets a single source transmit to multiple receiving devices simultaneously. Think of it like a radio broadcast over Bluetooth. A projector with Auracast support could stream audio to multiple speakers in different rooms, all perfectly synchronized. And the latency is much lower than classic Bluetooth because Auracast uses the LE audio stack with the LC3 codec, which is designed for low latency.
Instead of running speaker wire through the walls, you could have a speaker in the bedroom, one in the hallway, one in the living room, all receiving the same audio stream from the projector, in sync.
An Auracast isn't limited to two devices the way classic Bluetooth typically is. You can broadcast to an unlimited number of receivers. The catch is that Auracast is still rolling out. It's part of the Bluetooth 5.2 spec, which was finalized a few years ago, but device support is only now becoming common. Samsung's newer phones and earbuds support it. Some hearing aids use it. But projector manufacturers haven't widely adopted it yet. It's coming, though.
Daniel also mentioned Snapcast, which is different. That's a software solution for multi-room audio over Wi-Fi, right?
Right. Snapcast is an open-source multi-room audio system. It works by having a server that captures audio from a source, like a projector's aux output or a streaming device, and then distributes it over the network to client devices, which can be Raspberry Pis connected to speakers, old phones, whatever you have lying around. The synchronization is excellent because it uses a master clock and buffers the audio on each client to compensate for network jitter.
You could take the audio output from the projector, feed it into a Snapcast server running on a Raspberry Pi, and then have Snapcast clients on cheap speakers in different rooms. That's very Daniel. He's an open source developer. He'd love that kind of tinkering.
And the beauty of Snapcast is that it's platform agnostic. It doesn't care what kind of speakers you're using. You can mix and match an old set of computer speakers in the kitchen, a decent Bluetooth speaker in the bedroom, a hi-fi system in the living room. Snapcast syncs them all. The downside is that it requires some setup. It's not plug-and-play the way Auracast is supposed to be.
For Daniel, who's technical and enjoys this stuff, Snapcast might actually be more appealing than waiting for Auracast to mature. He could build the system now with hardware he already owns.
He could integrate it with Home Assistant, which I know he uses. There are Snapcast integrations for Home Assistant that let you control zones, adjust volume per room, group, and ungroup speakers. It's a properly hackable solution.
Let me pull us back to the projector itself for a moment. Daniel mentioned he likes that the projector doesn't dominate the room the way a TV does, that it tucks away. But there's another advantage he didn't mention. Projectors are gentler on the eyes.
Oh, this is a real thing. A TV is emitting light directly into your eyes. A projector is bouncing light off a surface, so you're viewing reflected light. It's the same difference as looking at the sun versus looking at a sunlit wall. Your eyes fatigue less with reflected light, especially in a dark room. There's less strain on the iris because it's not constantly adjusting to a bright point source in an otherwise dark environment.
For someone who's watching at the end of the day, winding down before sleep, that matters. Blue light exposure from direct view displays suppresses melatonin. A projector's reflected light is less intense, and you're typically sitting further from the screen, so the total light hitting your retina is lower.
There's actually been some research on this. A study out of the University of Toledo a few years back looked at retinal cell damage from blue light exposure, and while the absolute risk from screens is low, the mechanism is real. Reflected light reduces the intensity significantly. It's not a reason to buy a projector by itself, but it's a nice secondary benefit.
All right, let's get practical. If Daniel is shopping for an upgrade from his first-gen Nebula capsule, what are the top 3 or 4 units he should be looking at in 2026?
The portable projector market has matured a lot. I'd break it into tiers. In the ultra-portable category, the soda can form factor, the Anker Nebula Capsule 3, is the direct successor to what Daniel has. It's pushing 250 ANSI lumens, 1080p, built-in Google TV with official Netflix support. That was a big deal because earlier Nebula models didn't have Netflix certification and we had to sideload it. The Capsule 3 also has an integrated battery good for about 2.5 hours, which is enough for most movies. It's around 400 to 500.
The Netflix certification matters because otherwise you're navigating the app with the projector's remote in some janky workaround mode, which is exactly the kind of friction that makes you not want to use the thing.
The out-of-box experience is everything. Next step up in size and performance, you've got the XGIMI Halo Plus. That's pushing 700 ANSI lumens, which is a massive jump. It's 1080p, Harman Kardon speakers, Android TV with Netflix certified. It's larger, about the size of a small Bluetooth speaker, but still portable. Battery life is similar, around 2.5 hours. That runs about 600 to 700.
XGIMI has been gaining market share pretty aggressively. They're not just a budget brand anymore.
They've really established themselves. Their optical quality is excellent, and their auto keystone and autofocus algorithms are some of the best in the business. The Halo Plus can be placed at a pretty severe angle, and it'll square up the image in under a second. It's almost magical.
What about the Nebula Mars series?
The Mars 3 is the current flagship portable from Anker. It's a step up again, 1000 ANSI lumens, 1080p, a massive 40-watt speaker system, and the battery is rated for 5 hours. That's enough for 2 movies. It's also IPX3 water resistant, so you could use it outdoors by a pool. But it's bigger and heavier, around 5 pounds. It's less toss it in a bag and more carry it to the backyard. Price is around 1000.
If Daniel wants to go even brighter.
Then you're leaving the battery-powered category and getting into lifestyle projectors, something like the BenQ GV50 or the Samsung Freestyle. The Freestyle is interesting because it's got a unique cradle design that lets you rotate it 180 degrees, so you can project onto the ceiling, which is actually fantastic for bedroom use. Lie flat on your back, watch something on the ceiling. No screen needed. It's only 500 LED lumens though, and it's not as bright as the specs suggest in real-world use. The autofocus and auto keystone are excellent, but brightness is the trade-off.
I've seen the Freestyle. The form factor is clever, but it feels like a first-gen product that's still finding its footing.
The BenQ GV50 is a newer entry. It's designed specifically for ceiling projection in bedrooms. It's got a built-in battery, Android TV, and a unique magnetic stand that attaches to metal surfaces. 500 ANSI lumens, 1080p, and BenQ's color accuracy is generally better than Samsung's on the projector side. BenQ has been making projectors for decades. They know their optics.
We've got options from around $400 up to $1,000. But let me ask you the question. Daniel is probably asking himself, is it worth spending $1,000 on a portable projector when you can get a 65-inch TV for less?
It depends entirely on what you value. If image quality per dollar is your only metric, the TV wins every time. A 500 TCL or Hisense TV will be brighter, sharper, and more color accurate than a 1000 projector. But the projector gives you something the TV can't, a 100-inch image that disappears when you're done. The ability to watch in different rooms, or outside, or on the ceiling. It's a different product category solving a different problem.
Daniel's use case is specifically about not wanting a permanent screen dominating the bedroom. He values reclaiming the space. For that, a projector is the right tool, and spending more gets him a brighter, sharper image in the same form factor.
The upgrade from 100 ANSI lumens to 500 ANSI lumens is transformative. It's the difference between, I can kind of see what's happening in dark scenes, and this looks like a real TV.
Let's circle back to screens. Daniel asked what to look for in a projector screen, and he mentioned all the jargon around materials. Can you decode that?
The materials generally fall into a few categories. Matte white is the baseline. It's a flexible vinyl or fabric with a matte white coating. Gain is around 1.0 to 1. It's neutral, works with any projector, and it's cheap. The downside is that it doesn't reject ambient light, so it's best in a dark room. That's what Daniel would probably start with for a roll-down screen. Next is glass beaded screens. These have tiny glass beads embedded in the surface that reflect light directionally, giving a gain of around 1.5 to 2. They're brighter than matte white, but the viewing angle is narrow. For a bedroom where you're directly in front, it could work well.
Then there's the ALR screens you mentioned.
ALR screens use a microstructured optical surface. Some use a sawtooth pattern that reflects light from the projector downward toward the viewer while absorbing light from above. Others use a lenticular structure that rejects light from the sides. These can have gain values from 0.6 to 1.5 depending on the design. A good ALR screen can reject 60 to 80% of ambient light while maintaining image brightness, but they're expensive and they're picky about projector placement. An ALR screen designed for a ceiling-mounted projector won't work well with a table. Mounted portable projector because the light rejection angle is wrong. Daniel would need to make sure the ALR screen is designed for his specific projector placement.
For a portable projector on a side table or tripod, what's the right screen type?
Honestly, for his use case, a tab tension matte white pull-down screen is probably the sweet spot. It'll be a noticeable upgrade from the white wall, it's affordable, and it doesn't introduce any compatibility headaches. If he wants to get fancy, a gray screen with a gain of 4.8 to 0.9 can improve perceived contrast in a room that's not perfectly dark. Gray screens absorb some ambient light and deepen blacks, at the cost of a slight reduction in peak brightness. With a 500 ANSI lumen projector, you've got brightness to spare in a dark room, so trading some of it for better black levels is a reasonable choice.
What about screen size? Daniel's projecting in a bedroom. What's the sweet spot?
For a bedroom, 80 to 100 inches diagonal is the typical range. Much bigger than that, and you're limited by the room dimensions and the projector's throw ratio. Much smaller, and you might as well use a TV. The nice thing about a projector is that screen size is adjustable. You just move the projector closer or further, so Daniel can experiment and find what feels right before committing to a fixed screen size.
If he's buying a roll-down screen, he needs to measure the wall and make sure the screen housing fits.
Yes, and pay attention to the drop. That's the amount of black material at the top of the screen that lets you position the viewable area at the right height. If the screen is mounted near the ceiling, you need enough drop to bring the image down to eye level. Otherwise, you're craning your neck.
Let's talk about one more thing Daniel brought up. The protective case. He mentioned having a nice case for his current projector. When he upgrades, is that something you should factor in?
For a portable projector that's going to move between rooms or travel, absolutely. A good semi-rigid case protects the lens and the optics from bumps and dust. Dust is actually a bigger issue than people realize. If dust gets inside the sealed optical engine of a DLP projector, it can show up as spots on the projected image, and cleaning it requires disassembly. A case is cheap insurance. Some of these projectors come with one. The Mars 3 includes a case. The X-Jimmy Halo Plus usually does too. It's worth checking because it's a 30 to 50 accessory if you have to buy it separately.
Alright, I want to zoom out for a second. Daniel's prompt got me thinking about the broader trend here. Projectors went from corporate training rooms to in-flight magazines in the span of maybe a decade. What trother?
LED light sources, battery density, and the miniaturization of DLP chips. Traditional projectors used metal halide lamps that were hot, power-hungry, and had a limited lifespan, maybe 2,000 to 3,000 hours before they dimmed noticeably. LED. Light sources last 20,000 to 30,000 hours and generate far less heat. That means you can shrink the cooling system, which shrinks the whole projector. Combine that with lithium-ion batteries that can run the thing for a few hours, and a DLP chip the size of a postage stamp, and suddenly you've got a projector that fits in your hand.
The software side. Android TV, Autofocus, AutoKeystone. That's what made them consumer-friendly. 10 years ago, setting up a projector meant manual focus, manual keystone, navigating a clumsy menu system. Now you point it at a wall, and it does the work.
The autofocus in particular was a breakthrough. Early portable projectors had manual focus wheels, and if you bumped the unit, you'd have to refocus. Modern units use a time-of-flight sensor or a camera to continuously adjust focus. Some even detect when the projector has been moved and refocus automatically. It removes the last bit of friction.
Do you think we're approaching the physical limits of how small these can get? Or is there another shrink cycle coming?
We're close to the limits for the soda can form factor, because you need a certain lens diameter to collect enough light from the LED source. You can't cheat physics. The EDNDU, which is the light-gathering capacity of the optical system, is constrained by the size of the DLP chip and the lens aperture. Make the lens too small and you lose too much light. That's why the ultra-portable projectors top out around 250 to 300 ANSI lumens. To get brighter, you need a bigger lens and a bigger heatsink. The improvements will come from LED efficiency and battery density, not from further miniaturization. We're seeing around 5 to 10% per year in lumens per watt, so a projector the size of the Capsule 3 might be pushing 350 ANSI lumens in a few years. But it's incremental, not revolutionary.
What about laser light sources? Are those trickling down to portables?
They're starting to. Laser projectors have been in the high-end home theater market for a while. They offer better color accuracy and higher brightness than LED, but they're more expensive and require more cooling. There are a few portable laser projectors now. The Hisense C1 is a mini laser projector, and some LG Cinebeam models use a laser, LED hybrid, but they're still in the $1,000-plus range. As laser diode costs come down, we'll probably see more laser portables.
One thing we haven't touched on is connectivity. Daniel mentioned Bluetooth, which is standard, but what about Wi-Fi? Most of these have Wi-Fi for streaming, but can they receive a cast from a phone or laptop?
Almost all of them support Chromecast or Miracast or both. The Android TV models have Chromecast built in, so you can cast from any app on your phone. Some also support Apple AirPlay. The Nebula models running Android TV support Chromecast but not AirPlay natively. XGimme supports both on some models. It's worth checking the spec sheet because casting from an iPhone is a common use case.
If Daniel wants to plug in a laptop or a game console...
Every portable projector I've mentioned has at least one HDMI port. The Capsule 3 uses a mini HDMI to save space, which means you need an adapter or a special cable. The larger units have full-size HDMI input lag over HDMI. Varies. The XGimme Halo Plus has a game mode that drops latency to around 26 milliseconds, which is playable for most games. The Nebula Mars 3 is around 35 milliseconds in game mode. Not competitive gaming territory, but fine for casual play.
For audio output, if Daniel wants to connect to external speakers...
Most have Bluetooth output, a 3.5mm aux jack for wired speakers, and some have optical audio out. The aux jack is the most reliable for low latency. Bluetooth audio can introduce lip sync issues depending on the codec. If the projector and speaker both support aptX low latency, it's usually fine, but that's not guaranteed.
Which brings us back to Snapcast. If he's running audio through a Snapcast server, he'd take the aux output from the projector into the server, and then latency isn't an issue because Snapcast handles synchronization across all the clients.
It's a more involved setup, but it's also more flexible. He could have the projector in the bedroom, audio playing through a nice speaker in the bedroom, and simultaneously playing through a smaller speaker in the kitchen if he's grabbing a snack. All perfectly in sync.
That's the kind of thing Daniel would enjoy setting up. It's a project as much as it is a product.
Which I think is part of why he's asking. He's not just looking for a purchase recommendation, he's looking for the ecosystem. What's the setup that maximizes the experience?
Let's summarize. For the projector itself, Daniel should look for at least 300 to 500 ANSI lumens, 1080p resolution, DLP with a fast color wheel to avoid rainbow effect, automatic keystone and autofocus, and official Netflix certification. Top contenders: Nebula Capsule 3 for ultra portability, XGME Halo Plus for the sweet spot of brightness and portability, Nebula Mars 3 if you want maximum brightness and battery life.
For the screen, a tab tension matte white pull-down screen is the straightforward upgrade from a white wall. If the room has some ambient light, a gray screen with gain around 0.8 to 0.9 will improve perceived contrast. ALR screens are the premium option, but require careful matching to projector placement.
For audio, the built-in speakers on the mid-range and higher units are decent for casual use. For multi-room audio, Auracast is the upcoming standard, but device support is still limited. Snapcast over Wi-Fi is a more hackable, available right now solution that integrates with Home Assistant.
Don't forget a protective case, especially if the projector is going to move between rooms or travel. Dust is the enemy of DLP optics.
One final thought. Daniel mentioned he's not much of a TV guy, and I think that's underappreciated. There's a whole category of people who don't want a TV as the centerpiece of their living space. Projectors serve that audience perfectly. The image appears when you want it, disappears when you don't. It's a fundamentally different relationship with the screen.
It's also a different relationship with content. There's something about projecting a movie onto a wall that feels more intentional than flipping on a TV. You're making a deliberate choice to watch something. It's closer to the experience of going to a theater, even if it's just your bedroom ceiling.
On that note, I think we've given Daniel plenty to work with. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
The word slime mold first appeared in English print in 1911, derived from the German Schleimpilz, a term coined by botanist Anton de Bary. De Bary was the first to recognize that slime molds are not fungi at all, but belong to the protist kingdom, making the name itself a kind of etymological misnomer that has persisted for over a century. Meanwhile, in the Seychelles, the endemic palm species, Lodoicea maldivica, produces the largest seed in the plant kingdom, weighing up to 18 kilograms. A fact that has absolutely nothing to do with slime molds, but is impressive nonetheless.
I feel like Hilbert just took us on a very strange journey through the 1910s.
Slime molds aren't molds, and the Seychelles has heavy seeds. This has been My Weird Prompts, thanks to our producer Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. We'll catch you next time.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.